The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
This is a special recording in anticipation of the 2013 Manhattan Cocktail Classic.
Classic.
The Classic is a celebration of the intersections between cocktails and culture. With nearly 100 events spread across 5 days in 3 boroughs and a multi-day trade conference to boot, the Manhattan Cocktail Classic offers a vast array of unique experiences to enthusiasts and professionals alike, expanding the very definition of what constitutes a cocktail event. This year's festivities kick off with the gala on Friday, May 17th at the New York Public Library. For more information about all of the events and tickets, visit ManhattanCocktailClassic.com.
All right. Thank you for tuning into the Heritage Radio Network. You are listening to a special community session. We are going to be talking about cocktails and film. I'm your host today, Erin Fairbanks, and we are in the studio with Jen Marshall, beverage manager at the Nighthawk Cinema, and Jesse White, filmmaker. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Thank you.
So as always, we're coming to you live on a rainy day today in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And so, Jesse, you just made a film called Spirit Guides. Take us through it. Where did the idea for that come from? Do you have a cocktail background, a film background? What's your story?
It's a little bit of both. I got into the film mainly because of just a love of history and also a love of shiny objects. And I got a job behind the bar after graduating with a master's degree in art history and after also having a background in fine art from Cooper Union, and had kind of been working on film since I had graduated and knew that I wanted to make a film and was looking for a subject, and it just happened to coincide with me getting this job. And I was just kind of overwhelmed with this new world that I had seen. I wasn't someone that went to bars actively, and so to kind of be behind a bar and to see the craft that was going to some of the drinks that I was witnessing being made, and to learn about the history from the bartenders I was working with, was just incredibly exciting. And I knew that I had found my subject.
Nice. And Jen, the Nighthawk Cinema is not like a traditional cinema. I mean, you guys stand out in that you offer, you know, full service menus, beverages. Can you give us a little bit of the background for the cinema and how you guys, like how you personally became involved?
Well, I've been there since the beginning, since the onset. We're loosely modeled after businesses that have the same model in other states, but we actually had to overturn a state law in order to make it happen here.
Really?
There was a pre-prohibition law on the books that you couldn't serve alcohol in a motion picture theater. So, you know, lobbyists and bills on the Senate floor and Cuomo passing it, you know, down the road. We're currently still the only one in the entire state where you can actually have a cocktail and watch a movie at the same time.
And not just any cocktails. I mean, you guys curate like a pretty interesting mix of beverages, and you pair things with movies. And
yeah, every movie that we have, I make a special drink for it, and myself usually, or one of my bartenders. And it's a really fun, unique platform that not every bar gets. So it's kind of a treat.
Yeah, the intersections of cocktails and film. So, Jesse, you know, you were, let's see, you graduated with your master's in art history and moved on to bartending. You're behind the bar, kind of thinking about your burgeoning beverage career, but also thinking about a film. So, Spirit Guides, what is it about? Like, take us through the film.
The film mirrors my own learning process of being behind the bar and also of filmmaking as well. This is the first movie that I had made myself. I had previously worked on films for other directors. And so the process of actually finding a subject and bringing it to life was paired with my understanding of what it takes to make a drink and what it takes to be a good bartender and what it takes to be a really good standout bar in the city. And so for me, it was a learning process from every angle. And what really got me excited was listening to bartenders discuss not only their creative process in coming up with drinks, but also their knowledge and the history and at least with the bartenders that I had come to respect and really admire, an understanding of where they fit in that historical fabric, and a real sense of pride that went in to the job that they were doing, which again was just totally radical for me. I was watching people working who had such a rigor in what they were doing, and such a feast for knowledge, like wanting to understand where these ingredients for the drinks came from, how to recreate a drink properly, and then how to think about a situation creatively and pull a drink out of it. You know, so for me, especially someone that was, you know, familiar with a creative process, it was being able to talk to people about their creative process using materials that I had never thought about before. I mean, for me, prior to working in a bar, alcohol, I like to tell friends, I have a friend that's a really amazing chef, and I'm so jealous of him. He goes to the supermarket, and he can go into the produce section and basically just conjure a meal out of what he's looking at. And these bartenders can go into a liquor store or a step behind a bar, and these aren't bottles of liquor, but they're different opportunities for taste and for flavor, and they're ingredients. And you know, you can look at how flavors pair together and create an interesting cocktail or create an interesting experience for someone based upon not just a knowledge of history and where drinks came from, but on a growing knowledge of you know what these bartenders are surrounding themselves with every day.
Sure. And well, Jen, you get to do a little bit of that kind of on a weekly basis when you're coming up with cocktails to pair. So what can you tell us about maybe one particular like film and cocktail combination that's been a highlight for you, or something that really challenged or pushed you kind of outside your normal?
It can be really tricky sometimes. It's depending on how much a movie lends itself to an obvious inspiration. So, I mean, honestly, like when we showed Drive, I did a Dark and Stormy with Gosling's rum and Gosling's gingerbread because that's hilarious.
Right, right.
And so it's, you know, if I can take it that way, I will. Sometimes it's so difficult that I sort of, well, I'll resort to a beer, perhaps, you know. But usually it's just like I try to see the movie before we get it, if at all possible.
Right.
So I watch movies differently now in that way. Even if it's not a movie we're going to screen, if I see a movie, I'm looking at it like, oh, what can I do? What would the cocktail be for this? And it's really weird. But like even to the point where, you know, we did this indie movie called We Need to Talk About Kevin. Giving anything away,
geez, that
at
movie.
A certain point in the film, a little girl loses her eye. the drink I did for that ended up being a sort of lychee martini with a lychee in it.
Oh,
but you have the beauty of it, and what I try to do is I try to make the special like an inside joke. So you don't understand why it's a special until you've seen
the
movie and you're watching it, and all of a sudden you look down and you're like, damn it, I have an eyeball in my drink. I try to have fun with it.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah, I mean, I found that film pretty disturbing, and I think having a lychee in my mouth at that moment might kind of add to that contrast. Well, so Jesse, the film, now do you follow certain bartenders, or how do you kind of walk through this kind of exploration?
Well, I didn't follow particular bartenders like the way a traditional documentary would. Maybe, you know, I wake up in the morning, what do they do to prepare themselves for the shift, and then going
like
to work.
They put on their suspenders.
Yeah. I mean, it's for me, the job itself became a character, and I was lucky enough to get in contact with some just amazing bartenders who, for me, kind of just revealed different facets of the job. And so through their insights and their experiences and their perspective, I wanted to show a really full picture of what being behind the bar was like, and also just the story of bartending in America, to some extent, for me, is like a classic redemption tale, where you have, you know, a bartender at the turn of the century. Some of the historical books are, or the very first one was written in 1862 by this fantastic bartender named Jerry Thomas, and he just, you know, wrote down these cocktails that had been being made, and he himself was a little bit of a character. Legend has it that he was wearing, you know, like 10 rings on his fingers and had two white rats that were kind of traveling around his arms as he was making drinks, and he was, you know, like a modern day, you know, just, I guess you could say, like he was blinged out. But really did, you know, a fantastic job, and created an amazing compendium and resource for bartenders. And he kind of ushered in this amazing golden age of bartending at the turn of the century, where I there's a Mark Twain quote, I think, from Going West, where it says, you know, to be a bartender and to kill a man is to be illustrious. And bartenders in bars held this amazing social platform for people, and bartenders were looked upon as being on the same level as, like, politicians and lawmakers and doctors and contributing to the public good and welfare in a social capacity that was very rare to find in any other environment. And you had, you know, amazing drinks that were being created around this time, like the martini, the Manhattan, the sidecar. And then you had, you know, first it was, you know, the world wars, which depleted a lot of men and kind of introduced and ushered in this sense of canned goods and kind of non-fresh food. And then you had prohibition. And then the bartender, instead of becoming illustrious, becomes an outlaw. And this entire tradition is lost. A lot of bartenders that were doing amazing things left, went to Cuba, went to Europe, and this master's trade, this master and apprentice relationship that existed for such a long time, disappeared.
Went underground.
Went underground. But also, you know, prohibition wasn't the golden age of cocktails either. It was, you know, the booze that you were getting wasn't really good quality. You know, it was, if anything, prohibition taught America the importance of a really cool environment, you know, and that sometimes a really great environment can trump a really bad drink. But it wasn't until the 80s, really, that there was this resurgence, and it happened very specifically with, you know, two very important figures and one very hard-to-find book.
Well, so one of the things that strikes me about cocktails and cocktail culture is it feels like a distinctly American story. I mean, you travel to other parts of the world and there's just not that same feeling around cocktails. I mean, do you find that to be the case, or do you notice, I guess, Jen, in films, like, you have an easier time with American versus non-American films, or is that not really a thing?
Not necessarily, because I draw inspiration from the most random things. So it doesn't, that doesn't really translate that way. But I wonder if that's not the case now, but it's changing.
Yeah.
You know, like, as far as the cocktail culture in other countries, I think sit back and watch. It's probably happening.
Well, it is. I haven't traveled abroad enough to know or to really put my finger on the pulse of what's happening overseas. But I know that I think other bartenders have echoed these sentiments as well, that the cocktail is a distinctly American tradition, and that, you know, Dale has this, Dale DeGroff, who's in the film, has this this wonderful assessment where he calls the cocktail a metaphor for the American people, and I don't think he's far off. And he goes on to explain, he goes, you know, you had all these immigrants coming over and they brought their cultures and they also brought their bottles. And, you know, America was where, you know, we took those bottles and we shook it up and we made something with it. And, you know, I think the cocktail is a distinctly American thing, and it's a large part of our heritage, and it's part of our drinking tradition.
Yeah, well, so speaking of drinking and drinking traditions, I mean, I feel like I've seen a little bit this resurgence of older types of spirits. You know, moonshine is, I guess, what's coming right to the top of my head, but also people making mead and these things that, I don't know, to my sense of taste, they were like around to fill a necessity, not necessarily a pursuit of something particularly delicious. And in this day and age, you're also seeing this huge rise in, like, small-scale distilleries, artisanal spirit making here in New York and across the country. And I wonder, you know, like thinking specifically about the kind of raw ingredients of a cocktail, is the bartender kind of this maestro who can, you know, create something of nothing, or is he or she, like, dependent on the raw ingredients? And, you know, is there is like that, as things come in and out, you know, there's like this tradition and then there's breaking traditions and some that we should hold on to and some that we should let go of. And I don't know if you guys want to just play around with that concept a little bit.
I mean, there's been a research. I mean, there's, I think at the time of Prohibition, there was maybe, and if anyone's fact checking, I might be in trouble, but I think, you know, maybe around like 1,600 different types of spirits that were available for bartenders. And now I think the number's over 6,000. And so I mean, it's incredible to be making drinks in this day and age because the choices that you have are so great. The opportunities to create new things are available to you. At the same time, you know, I think it's a lovely representation of where we are right now. It's like there's so many distilleries, even in Brooklyn, that are creating their own gins, their own whiskeys. Just the fact that there's an interest there. I think in the last 10 years, the public before would go into a bar and maybe not feel comfortable ordering a cocktail or even know about a cocktail. And now I think you've got customers coming in that are so knowledgeable. You know, it's really hard to... It's hard to half-ass things now, which is great because the bar has been set so high. I was trying to avoid that. It's a great challenge for bartenders today to kind of have to come up with something new and kind of push the bounds of creativity. And luckily, there are just so many great ways to do that. I think one of the gentlemen who's in the film is a bartender named Eben Freeman. And Eben has a wonderful history of working at some of the most fantastic bars in Manhattan, and I think now he's the creative director for the Alta Maria Restaurant Group, which has a number of like incredibly fine dining restaurants in Manhattan. And he helped kind of develop solid cocktails and thinking about cocktails in a very creative, like non-linear way. He opened up a bar called Taylor. That was unfortunately short-lived, but you could go to this bar and you could order absinthe gummy bears or a gin and tonic that would be on a lime chip. And I had a wonderful experience. He invited me to his home and I interviewed him there and took me into his kitchen and made four cocktails for me without ever picking up a shaker. It was just in his kitchen using different ingredients. His understanding of flavor, his understanding of texture, his understanding of region and geography, knowing how he wanted to kind of use different flavors in different parts of the world to create a, basically, you know, his drinks create like an ambiance and a sensation that goes beyond just sipping, but you know, you're eating something and you're thinking about what you're eating and maybe you're tasting those flavors in a different way than if you had normally been drinking it.
Yeah. You're inputting out almost sounds like a little bit of texture into your beverage, which is something that I think is not always at the forefront of one's mind. Well, I'm curious about the, as there's, you know, kind of this resurgence and rise in cocktail culture in this day and age, what is the kind of infrastructure that needs to build up around that? I mean, we've talked about new distilleries and the infusion of spirits, but is there, I mean, I'm always struck, one of the most charming things about going to a nice cocktail place is the ice and the glassware and the kind of other aesthetics. I think about, you know, Damon Bolte, who hosts a speakeasy here. If I go down to Prime Meats and have him make me a cocktail, he's got this beautiful, you know, crystal kind of mixing mm-hmm. and these like long, gorgeous kind of metal spoons. And there's this, I'm wondering what are some of the auxiliary kind of businesses that are being like supported through the rise of the cocktail culture?
I know Cocktail Kingdom is an amazing resource for bartenders now. And I think, if you look at that website and the amazing products that they offer for bartenders and for just enthusiasts, it's incredible. The cocktail books that they have begun to print out and sell just weren't available 30 years ago, and so people are becoming aware of a tradition, and I think people are. It's easier for a consumer now to gain that information and to also kind of look at what the old aesthetics were, like, you know, a nice crystal glass to stir a drink in, or these beautiful long twisted spoons that come in, you know, copper, silver, and gold, whose lengths sometimes are just bizarre but like really elegant, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's true, it's like sitting at a bar seeing the tools that are being used to make your drink. I mean, just it's so much a part of the drink itself, that ambiance, that feeling that you're being taken care of and you're the thing that you're about to enjoy that's forming in front of you is being made with amazing tools, in control of, you know, or being controlled by a great bartender.
So if we're thinking a little bit about this idea of cocktails in film, or cocktails in just, TV, too, you know, for whatever reason, like Mad Men pops to the top of my head as, like, kind of something that's very current where there's a real focus on imbibing. But I'm wondering what else is, out there for...
We actually screen Mad Men every Sunday night at Nighthawk, just in the bar. And, of course, I've got special drinks. So, you know, I don't have a Gibson on my menu, but I do on Sunday nights. Just because it's so appropriate.
Are there other kind of like classic cocktail films where like the cocktail plays a character role? Or
I mean, there certainly must be, but nothing is springing to mind right now.
In the Thin Man films, I know. I know this only because trying to find clips of old movies to kind of speckle through my documentary. There's just an amazing clip of. Oh gosh, William Powell, is that his name? Oh, another
fact checkers.
Well, yeah. Get on it. Well, the main character he's talking about martinis and the perfect way to make a martini, which is actually incorrect in the movie. he says that you should shake a martini to waltz time. I believe that a good martini should not be
shaken,
should be stirred. But that's up for debate.
to each their own, I suppose. Well, so I want to put you guys a little bit on the spot here and ask maybe for some cocktail pairings for two of my favorite movies. So
all right.
they're a little different, but so one would be Tootsie with Dustin Hoffman, and the other would be Boogie Nights. I'm like, one is about a cross-dressing man.
Right, which, like, you could do... I mean, like, if I were, like, to sit down and be like, okay, we're screening this and I have to do a cocktail. With Boogie Nights, I would go era.
Yeah.
You know? It might not necessarily be tied in specifically to, you know... I'm not making a porno drink, but...
right. It's not going to be Sex on the Beach.
No. For Spring Breakers, it is. but let's see... Tootsie, man, I don't know.
I'm going to say like white wine spritzer or something, only because I love there's like the scene in the movie where he's like, why do you drink so much? And she's like, because it's not fattening and it's not good for me. And how many things can you say
so
like
if
that?
That's like, if there's ever a specific drink that appears in the film, like if I'm able, that's going to be special because it's so perfect once you're watching it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, I feel...
I put you two on the spot.
Are you going
to... I'm still trying to think about a Boogie Nights cocktail.
You're like, I just get lost in all my wonderful memories of Amber Waves. And like,
but see, I often name the drinks after characters. And if, like, a color ties in or something, you know, red rum, things like that.
Yeah, no, awesome.
It's funny.
So... Well, all right. So, folks, if they want to, Jesse, if they want to come by Nighthawk, they want to screen your film, you guys are showing May 20th. Is that right?
Yeah.
9:00, and you can find tickets at www.nighthawkcinema.com.
Yep. And once it sells out online, there will still be a few extra available for purchase in person. That's just the way the system works.
Cool. And this is just one of, I think... dozens of Manhattan Cocktail Classic events. And you can find more about that lineup at www.manhattancocktailclassic.com. That's happening the 17th through the 21st. And the Russian Tea Room isn't Tootsie. You're right. See, Tootsie is a great cocktail film. You guys need to get on. Like if you show a screening, well, I mean, I'll be there.
You'll be there.
And
I will let you know.
All right. So, well, one more time, just so folks have all the info, give us a lowdown on the film and the screening.
Oh, yeah. So the screening, again, is going to be on May 20th at Nighthawk. And the event is going to be, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be just an amazing confluence of history, past and current. There's going to be a Q&A following the film with Dale DeGroff, Julie Reiner, and Jim Meehan. There's going to be guest bartenders who are going to be making drinks both before, during, and after the film. And they include Joaquin Simo, who works at Pouring Ribbons, Rob Kruger, who works at Employees Only and Extra Fancy, Megan Dorman from Rain's Law Room, Lynette Marrero, the co-founder of Speed Rack, Jim Meehan from PDT, Aaron Reese, who works at Death & Company and MyOL, and Jim Kearns, who works at Prime Meats and any other fantastic bar in the city, is usually where he's at. It's just an amazing lineup of bartenders, and we've got some fantastic sponsors too in Reka Vodka, Monkey Shoulder, Whiskey Montelobos, and the wonderful folks at Santa Teresa Rum. So it's going to be quite an event.
Man, that sounds delicious. All right, well, get your tickets and get out there. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, are available for free as a download through iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Smart Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming, definitely visit www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you hear, and we hope that you do, please click that donate tab and become a member today. Thanks so much for listening, and keep tuning in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.